great to be with you. See that woman right there? Without her and the organization the president put together and his firm and strongly held embrace of this issue, we wouldn't have made nearly the progress we've made so far. I want you to know that, I sometimes, as you've observed, I sometimes become a little passionate about this issue, and I'm often asked, and I really mean this, by the press, is the reason for my passion that my mother or my wife or my sister was a victim of violence? And the answer was no. I was raised by a gentle man. My dad, I'm going to walk out here. My dad was a guy who thought that the worst sin of all was the abuse of power. And the cardinal sin was for a man. What are you doing? Oh, thank you. I didn't think I needed it. The cardinal sin was for a man to raise his hand to a woman. He would argue that there is no justification under any circumstance other than self-defense. None. Zero. None. None. For a man to raise his hand to a woman or to abuse her, mentally or physically. I mean that sincerely. By the time I was a kid, my dad was one of those guys who never raised a hand to any one of his children. But my dad expected us that if we saw it, get engaged. Try to stop it. Get engaged. When I wrote the Violence Against Women Act, you may recall, you may not recall, none of you are old enough to recall, but you may know that not a single women's group in the country supported me. Not one single group, as some will remember. And the reason was not that they didn't think it was important, but they were worried it would detract from gender issues, detract from the issue of choice, detract from other issues. So what I did was I wrote the legislation, as my sister would say, with my own little paw, and I was going nowhere. So I went to two places. I was invited to speak with a group of providers, women in the field running rape crisis shelters and intervention initiatives in the state of Rhode Island. And I met with them in the Capitol. And then I went to the state of Washington, and I met with another group of women. And they absolutely said, no, no, we're not going to remain silent on this. We have a chance to begin to change the culture. And after a significant amount of time, the legislation had been written, and all of a sudden, all the women in the Congress began to sponsor it. And Elie Schmiel deserves great credit because we all sat around my conference table, and I said, look, I'm going to introduce this, whether you like it or not. There were 9 organizations, including AAU and a whole group of the civil rights organizations. And Elie Schmiel finally spoke and said, why aren't we supporting this? Then everybody raised their hand, and we got started. We got started, and they made it happen. We got it passed with only 7 votes from the other team. We got it passed with only 7 votes on the other team. We got it reauthorized. We knew we didn't have it perfect the first time. We kept trying to improve it. And we improved it to immigrant women and Indian reservations, et cetera. We've expanded it, these rights. We did basically 3 things. We said, number one, we were going to embarrass police departments into organizing better to deal with this issue. And so we changed the law, for example, arrest on information, because that's what I learned out in the state of Washington, what they did. So if before this law was written, if you and I were standing in a corner and I smacked you, and your eye was black, and a cop saw it, he came up and said, do you want to swear out a warrant against me? And I'm standing here, and I'm 6'1", 178 pounds, and you know I'm going to be let out immediately, and I'm looking at you as the cop's asking. I'm not joking. This is how it worked. I'm invading your space. That's exact. Well, no, but that's exactly how it happened.
And so what would a woman say? The same thing any man would say. He was overpowered. No, I'm fine. We changed the law. I'm standing there, my hand was raised, you have a bruise, the cop can arrest on information. Begin to change the burden. I spent more time going around all around the nation to every, I'd find, and I did this, try to every group that was predominantly men. I'd go to the Chamber of Commerce dinners and lunches. I'd speak in other states. I'd go into the Elks Club speak, all these operations. And I'd say, you guys, you think that, because the what happened was, it was like, well, look, if she's getting beat up, why don't she just leave? Why don't she just leave? Or if your boss, as you walk out, pats you on the rear end, why didn't she just turn around and quit? Why didn't she tell him something? And I'd say, how many of you guys saw the movie Deliverance? There's reruns these days. There's a scene in Deliverance where these badass guys who are going down a river, tough guys, and they get dragged into the woods, and one of them gets tied to a tree and raped anally by another man. And he goes out of the woods. I said, what would you have done if that happened to you? You know, I'd go get my gun and I'd come back and I'd do whatever. Why wouldn't you say something? Because I was embarrassed. That's in the days when a judge was able to say to me before I wrote the law to change it federally, how short was the skirt you were wearing? What did you say to him? Because the impression was there must have been something that you did to provoke this action. My state of Delaware, a progressive state, they had a law on the books. And we went back and I had an incredible staff of women who put this together for me. We did this study, a day in the life of abused women. We took every day of the year and gave real live events of the way women were treated and abused. And it had an enormous impact on the way people looked at this. And we found out, I'd say to these men, okay, guys, you say you go out and do something. Well, why is it you don't? Why is it you don't? Because society is going to judge you as well as the abuser, the attacker. So things begin to change. They begin to change. Violence against women, and by the way, significant most of the violence against women is by known partners. People you know. How you doing, kiddo? People you know. We're old buddies. People you know. And so I thought, wow, we're really making some progress here. The president asked me, as the staff can tell you, did I have any request when I agreed to be vice president? I said, yeah, I want to bring the Office of Violence Against Women into my office, that I control it, into the vice president's office. Because we had a great attorney general, and we have had two great attorney generals, they demurred. I get to appoint who's going to head up these elements of the office. And so I would have people, there's a woman named Cynthia Hogan. She's the one that the NFL brought in after that idiot dragged his wife out by the hair out of a, you know, real first-rate, tough lawyer. So Cynthia came on to head it up. And there's a difference when the authority is inside the White House, because no one questions it. No, I mean, nobody in the administration questions it. The president's, the great thing about serving with this great man is whatever he gives me the authority to do it, and everybody knows I speak for him, and it's done. Well, I was feeling very good about the Violence Against Women Act, what was happening. So Cynthia went over and checked with the Bureau of Justice Statistics about how things were moving. And we found out something that was really the most discouraging thing that's happened in my career, not just the violence, but across the board. Women between girls and women between the ages of 14 and 24, guess what? The violence of sexual assault and rape hadn't gone down at all. It was still as prevalent as it was when I wrote the legislation. So I'm short-circuiting this, but so I held a virtual town meeting with thousands of young women and men on the phone, high schools and colleges all across America. And I asked them, I gave them a website and said, what one thing would you want me to do that would make you feel safer on your campus? Men and women. And women aren't the only one abused. A lot of men are raped as well. And you know what they came back with spontaneously? The overwhelming response was, get men involved. Get men involved. So I talked to the president about it, and that's why he started It's On Us. It's not just men, it's on all of us. Silence is complicity. Silence. You're an accessory. And so, I started going to a lot of your campuses and asking people to take the pledge. It sounds silly. Take the pledge. Talk about all these tough guys. I was a pretty good athlete in high school and college. By the way, I never heard the kind of talk in a locker room that allegedly took place. No, I never did, by the way. Never did. That's assault. That's just plain assault. But here's the deal. But there's a lot of pressure on men. There's a lot of pressure. You're a 5'7", 135-pound man, and you got a 220-pound football player hitting on a girl, and you're going to say, oh, wait a minute now, what do I do? But you got to stand up. You got to stand up. My oldest son was the Attorney General of the state of Delaware, a decorated Army veteran. His second year in college in a co-ed dorm, he's walking up the stairs to his room, passing the room, a young woman, and a guy is really hitting on her, physically putting his hand up her skirt. And he gray said, hey, Jack, what the hell are you doing? By the time the guy turned around, she opened the door, got in and left. Well, the whole lacrosse team came after him. But they didn't count on my number two son. He beat the living crap out of me. No, you think I'm chicken. But my point is, there's a lot of peer pressure on young men as well not to say something. But it's starting to change because of all of you. As I so eloquently point out, if a fraternity brother sees a drunk co-ed being taken upstairs and he doesn't walk up and say, not in my house, Jack, he's a goddamn coward. He's a coward. So guys, we can change the culture. I really believe it, because the vast majority of men are not abusers. The vast majority are not. Look how rapidly the culture, the domestic culture, has changed on LGBT issues. When I got in trouble for saying I support gay marriage, I was the only one to do that. I wasn't taking any chance. I got back here and I said, oh, God, what have you done? I said, the American people are already beyond us, man. 58% of the people already support my position. What the hell are you doing? What are you doing? No, I mean it. But here's the point. I wasn't taking any chance, and you're not taking any chance now speaking out. Think what's happened. Just when I took this job, when the president and I acquired these jobs, it had been a great honor. If you men went to you had a business luncheon at a fancy restaurant, and four or five of you in a major city are having lunch, and a waiter comes up and says, what would you like? If one of the people in sitting with you said, well, let me tell you, everybody remained silent. They wouldn't say anything. Today, if that happened at a luncheon, the other four guys said, what the hell's the matter with you, Jack? No, I'm serious. Because what's happened is, just like those brave women who came and testified before my committee, and they took enormous chances with millions of people watching them to tell their story, it takes enormous courage to do that. Enormous courage. And the reason why we made the change we have in the LGBT community is because so many people have the courage to come out. In many cases, risking their physical security by doing it. What happened? The rest of America looks and says, hey, they're just like me. What's the problem here? And how many of you young women have had someone come to you in the dorm and say, this is just what just happened to me? And you weren't sure what to do. I don't mean you in particular, but your colleagues. You didn't go to the RA. You didn't go to the school. You didn't say anything. Because you didn't know what to do. And you weren't sure. And you didn't want to get involved. I'm using you in an editorial sense. Nobody wants to be involved in this dirty little secret. Nobody wants to be involved. So they turn their head. A blind eye. Well, I didn't see that. I'll bet that every one of you have either been abused yourself or you know someone personally who has. And silence is a killer. I mean, it really is. And the more people speak up, the more people they speak up, the more it's going to become, the abuser becomes the pariah. The abuser's the pariah, not the abused. Tell the president I'm busy. No, I'm only joking. He's a great friend. But if I'm going to be late, he'll understand this one. Let me say it this way. Look, guys. You've heard the expression lots of times. Well, the rule of thumb in this is the following. You've heard that expression, haven't you? You know, so whatever. Well, the rule of thumb is you. It's anybody know what where that saying came from? That's right. Larger than your thumb. And it came from the 13th century in English common law because women were considered chattels in our English jurisprudential system, just like the cow, not a joke, or the sheep. And a man had the right to chastise his wife. But too many women were dying. And the common law, which is not codified, the common law develops over time. And in order to deal with too many women dying, they said, no man can beat his wife with a rod that is bigger than the circumference of his thumb. As much as we think we're so advanced, our Western culture, this is a cultural problem. A cultural problem. That we are making significant inroads into changing. And it really is on you guys. You guys are smart as hell. You're engaged. You care. You have passion about this. And encourage other people to speak out and speak up. I spend time at the academies talking about violence against women. Things are beginning to change because of you. Beginning to change because of you. I really do have to go, but here's the deal, guys. I'm no longer going to be vice president, but I'm going to be associated with several major universities and have a significant staff. I'm going to be setting up a foundation that's going to devote the rest of my life to dealing with violence against women. To deal with it, I mean. And I'm going to need your help. Because what we can't let happen, we've gained momentum, genuine momentum. These two women here are leaders in the community and have been leaders for some time. I mean it sincerely. Major, major, major factors in dealing with this issue. I've never felt this momentum before, have you? I mean, it's real. And I hope and pray, and I'm making no judgment, I mean this sincerely, I'm not sure what the next administration will do. I pray they will continue to make it a priority as Barack and I have. But whether they do or not, we can do so much of this as private citizens. And I plan on having some of the very brilliant women and a few men that have continued to work on this continue to work with me full time when I leave in doing this. And so we have to just continue to organize. Because look, my daughters, I lost one, but I have two daughters, and my four granddaughters. I have believed from the time I was conscious of this issue and the issues relating to women and men, because I've been surrounded by women who are straight, tough, and smarter than I have been. I mean that sincerely. Strong, strong women. From my mother to my sister to my deceased wife, my wife. There's not a single solitary thing that my grandson and my two sons could do that my daughters and my granddaughters can't do. Not a single solitary thing in life. Nothing. Not a single solitary thing. And the ultimate answer of changing this culture, we get to the point where that is endemic to everything we think about. And a lot of you are part of the millennial generation. You're the most understanding. You're the most open. You're the most tolerant. It's not hyperbole. These are facts of any generation in American history. And so I'm counting on you. For my granddaughters, I'm counting on you. Stay engaged. Stay engaged. And I am not allowed to announce until we're out of office exactly what I'm doing with this foundation. I mean, as a matter of ethical concern, I'm not allowed to say this is what the organization will be, this is where it will be, this is the money it will raise, this up. But I'm going to be asking for your help. No. I'm not being. It's not a joke. It'd be inappropriate for me to say I'm going to raise X number of dollars, and then well, who you're raising it from? Well, you're talking. I can't do that now. But in January 21st, we're going to start, or we're going to continue. And I'm working very hard with this oncoming administration to convince them that this is, in a sense, the civil rights issue of our time. It's the human rights issue of our time. I actually had a good speech to deliver for you. Hey, pal, how are you? You see this man here? This man is more connected than anybody I know with Hollywood. And one of the great things we did, I got an opportunity to introduce a woman who made a song famous, Until It Happens to You, at the Academy Awards. Over 200 million people worldwide watched the introduction that I gave to her and to the end of the song, and to the young women and men who walked out on the stage afterwards with the courage to say, I've been abused. The frightening thing was, for three of them, their parents never knew. Think how many young women you know who got drunk, got abused, and were more afraid to tell their parents than to do something about the accuser. I'm coming, okay? I better take my note back. I never worked for anybody before this. But the good news is Barack feels as strongly as I do about this. You're going to have a lot of people having your backs. Hope you'll have ours. We can make a great deal of progress. My goal is that within the next 5 to 7 years, when a father and mother drop their child off on a campus, their least worry is whether or not they're going to be raped or whether they're going to be abused. I really mean it. And by the way, hold your universities responsible. I'm about to put out a report. Hold your universities responsible. They have a moral obligation to step up. Thank you all very much. I love you. Thank you.